I am very proud to report that last week I provided written notification to the county of Cicero's intent to terminate certain services with them, and that we will be going with some other vendors as of January 1 for active payroll, medical insurance, all the varied benefits offered, as well as information technology services and recruiting.
That should speed things up there.
So we're very much on track with everyone, and everything looks very good.
What services remain or will remain after?
We will be participating in employer with the deferred comp 457 plan with the county. We will be conducting a search over the next year for that, so that the Form 700 filing with the state, they'll continue to do. They'll continue to provide services for the board elections. Those are kind of the main ones.
Okay. Sounds.
What's the status of the website?
Oh. The website is going to be launched in the next week or?
October 30th.
Yeah. So thank you for all of your comments on the website. That was very helpful.
And the comp study? Where are we on that?
The comp study, we received back some feedback. We're analyzing and working with the vendor on that. We're still shooting to have something to the board the end of November.
Okay. First,
Dina? AEP is on target, and we're going to start running our test payrolls in November. We have our open enrollment workshop next week, October 29th, so we'll have providers here to talk with the employees. So providers from Kaiser and CalPERS will be here, our benefits broker, MassMutual, all of those, so that staff can spend some time with them. And then they'll also have individual appointments with American Fidelity to get enrolled in all the plans the following week. So we are...
American Fidelity, like 401?
They're administering our Section 125. So it's like our premium conversion plan, our dependent care spending account, our health care. So they're just going to help collect the paperwork for enrollments and then meet with each staff member to make sure
right.
they understand it.
Christina, is that something we pay for in the form of a fee, or do they earn by selling other programs?
What, are you going to make a speech?
Selling other programs, so they will offer staff other voluntary benefits if staff want to enroll in those things. And that way we don't pay.
Interesting.
So even if none of our staff enroll in those voluntary plans, we still don't pay. Yeah. Just by American
great.
Fidelity.
Isn't he fun? He's just a great guy.
They'll do it for free.
The sort of hidden under the table part of that is staff somehow feels that they need to sign up because their employer is encouraging it, and if they don't, it's to their detriment. Are we clear with our staff that, in fact, they have that open choice? And
yeah, we had a staff meeting on Tuesday, and I discussed open enrollment with all of the staff, and I made that clear, that they don't have to sign up for anything. It's completely voluntary. It's up to them.
All right.
We also are looking at painting some Cicero visitor parking spots. So we'll have four parking spots painted over by this empty pond, or I guess it's not old ground, the bridges. So the four spots on either side of that walkway, we're going to have painted Cicero Visitor, so that as we have visitors come, those spots will be available for them to park in.
And those will be in addition to the designated board member spots.
Nice try.
With your name on it.
Nice try.
This may be the time to do that. We have also signed a contract with NeoGov. So once we start doing our own recruiting in January, we'll be able to use NeoGov to streamline that process, as well as get the word out to candidates that are interested in public employment. I think that's it.
Thank you.
Oh. This week, just finalizing the hazmat on-call review. I believe that's scheduled to come back to the board for the December 9th meeting, because we do have to do the notification process to those affected retirees.
When is that coming back to the board?
December 9th, I think.
Okay.
That's slated for the agenda.
Okay.
So we need that 30-day notification requirement to get to retirees. So that's just, the memos are being, the analysis and memos are being completed this week for final legal review next week, so that that notification can be done. Working with IT as part of the cutover and separation from the county, we've created a secure file transfer site for the employer contribution reports. Right now, the county drops them on a server that we share. So we got to actually have to, we won't have access to that server anymore. We have to create another method that they can transmit all the contribution reports. We're including the districts as far as access. So it's being built. We're going through the first phase of just testing. We'll be rolling that out with member services. We're going over that tomorrow with the member services staff, and then it'll be going into user testing next week and the week after. And then also the procedures manual, we're still working on that. We've got new procedures that are being rolled out with benefits. So I've been working with Tim, actually, and his staff. So those should be, we'll be doing some training in the next couple of weeks with benefits staff on that. And that specifically for the compensation article, that test that needs to be done.
Okay. Question for Raleigh or Gail. As you cut over, are there archive data in the county that's going to be ported over here, or will they maintain any archive data, and do we have access to it through ad hoc reports or anything, or what?
Well, actually, we have all the data that goes into the DOIT a shared folder right now. We do have access to that because the way it works, we actually port it over to our own environment, even from the DOIT server. So anything that has been there, we've been archiving going back, you know, a decade or so.
Yeah.
So we're not going to lose access to any of the archived information. But do it also if there's something that perhaps we found a gap, you know, through some other information request, the county will be maintaining those files on their site as well.
So is there an ongoing fee for them to maintain that archive data for us?
Well, we won't have a fee. We'd actually have to request them. And a lot of it might relate to our subledger platform, because we actually do transmit information back to them to support that old system.
I'm just concerned about losing anything in the transition that we might have had access to before, or do we have arrangements to pay to access it in the future, or are they going to store it, or what?
Well, right now, everything that's there has been mirrored on our site, so we have access to it. It's just a question of going, if it's something that may be from an information request that might go back more than a decade or something like that, where there may have been a gap. One of the items that I was looking at very closely is when we actually migrated and did the CPAS rollout. We wanted to make sure that we had all the information and access to it, just in case we did actually have to look at it. So we should have access to all of it, but we will be able to make the request from the county, but it won't be, we won't be able to initiate it ourselves. We'll have to actually ask them to retrieve it for us.
You raised my confidence level until you dropped in that word should. I was okay. Those are known as weasel words.
Karen.
Excellent question.
Tim.
Two quick updates on the Angela Gordon side. The head of the distressed debt team will be leaving Angela Gordon at the end of the year. This is Tom Fuller. While distressed debt was part of the energy strategy that the board approved, Tom was not part of this energy team. He was part of that whole group. So the partner who on the distressed team who was responsible for the energy team is also going to leave the entire distressed group. No direct impact on the energy strategy. Didn't trigger any key man provisions. Of course, it didn't have any particular energy expertise, so I think we're okay there. And on CityGov, Chi-Chi conducted an on-site with Scott. You were there, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Last week, you know, we identified, I think Scott brought it up, and then we followed up on it, the need for a stronger key man provision for the individual who is based in London. So now we have assurances from the firm that they will have either that individual or another principal always based in London for the duration of this follow-on strategy, given the volume of deals expected to come out of Europe.
Right.
Okay.
outside professional survey?
You know, let me mention one thing, because it happened while our meeting was going on this morning. For the last 7 or 8 years, the Department of Labor has put out a pronouncement about fiduciaries, mostly in that case ERISA fiduciaries, but it can be used for our purposes as well, putting some strictures on considering environmental, social, and corporate governance issues in your investment decisions. This comes up when you're presented with divestment. The latest is coal investment, for example, and you're trying to take into consideration, you know, climate change or something like that. And should you, is it appropriate to consider those kind of things, or just to stick with pure economic analysis? And funds have been all over the map. The Department of Labor in 2008 issued a pronouncement that said you can only consider these other issues if it's essentially costless to the system. That is, that it doesn't increase the cost or risk that you would consider in comparable investments without taking environmental and social issues into account. This morning at a press conference in Manhattan, Secretary Perez of the Department of Labor rescinded that and created greater flexibility, going back to a 1994 pronouncement of the Department of Labor and saying that there are situations when you can consider these issues if they have economic impact on the fund or anticipated economic impact on the fund. That's a coal divestment, for example. You would say, well, it might be appropriate to do that for social reasons, health reasons, but the real reason why we might consider investing in coal is because it's a lousy investment, and we shouldn't be investing in those things because those companies are going to go down. So it's really a kind of a revolutionary change in how the Department of Labor views the role of fiduciaries to consider these external issues. And we'll give you a little more direction on it later, but I thought you're going to start reading in your email chains and RSS feeds, you're going to start seeing some stuff about how this has come about this morning. So I just want to give you a heads up that it was happening while we were meeting this morning.
Do you expect any impact from that?
I expect a huge impact, not so much because the content has changed, but the emphasis has changed. And I think a lot of our funds, especially the more active funds, CalPERS, CalSTRS, New York State, I think they're going to seize upon this as giving them wider latitude to take those things into consideration. We're not so much involved in that. You know, we don't regularly consider fossil fuel divestment or things like that. You know, but every time I go to a CalSTRS meeting, there's a load of people in the public with black cards and signs saying, get out of fossil fuels and that sort of thing. So there's a lot more pressure by those groups. And the whole, you know, we don't spend a lot of time here involved in proxy fights and pushing corporate governance issues. But a lot of the big funds do, and I think there's going to be a collateral effect on all funds' governance that comes out. So we'll see what happens. You'll see it in the news today or tomorrow.
Thanks for the heads up.
Yeah, thank
that
you.
Was good.
Scott?
Yes.
This is the outside professionals comment section.
So I presume that you might be interested in hearing about our acquisition of SIS. So naturally, and I'm happy to take whatever questions you have, naturally we're very excited about this. From my perspective and for me, it really gives us an increase in revenue to help us continue the significant investments in research that we've been making over the past several years.
I just have one question. With that acquisition, does that mean that you or Ed are going to promote up to a management position and we will no longer have you, because I don't want to see that happen.
I appreciate that thought, and I can guarantee you that that will not happen. I'm actually already on the management committee and oversee our consulting group, so
but
I'm in a management position.
With us, right?
And we are staying with you, yeah.
It's good to know that Mr. Tellis is blocking your promotional opportunity.
Yeah.
I'm a very selfish person. I mean,
the name is SIS going away. The name.
We will stay Veris. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. They're located in the Bay Area. Did I my recall that?
Yeah, they have a
spot. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm assuming you're not moving.
We're going to keep that office open. Yeah. And no, there's going to be no personnel. Movement in terms of location. The former SIS folks, and this is not closing until January 1, but the SIS folks will stay in their office and Veris folks will stay in our offices. We do have one individual working out of his home in San Francisco, and so his new office will be the San Francisco office.
We didn't consolidate like the county and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we'll take advantage of those natural consolidation opportunities, but there will be no layoffs.
Good.
Great.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Trustee comments. Trustee.
I need to correct the agenda, the minutes for the meeting June 10th, where I had said a couple meetings ago that I wasn't present for what I thought was in that meeting June 10th. But actually, item number 7, it was referring to a closed session that occurred September 10th, 2014, where I was present and did vote. So I'm just asking that that be corrected.
You have that?
Yes.
Okay. Anyone else?
Yes. Yeah, I had a couple comments.
Yeah.
Wanted to report just quickly.
Tim already covered the Signature Gulf meeting. The only other thing I'll say is that's a very talented group, and I still see the value in the on-site visits. They assembled everybody, and we had Ness on satellite feed from London late his time. But really interesting discussion, and that's a really fine group of people, really smart people, who I think are very focused on the investment strategies that they're in, and particularly this one looks like it still has some upside. Clearly going to be a Europe-driven investment strategy, it seemed to me. That was one of my takeaways from that. But the quality of the people, first rate, so I felt very comfortable with that. Secondly, on Torchlight, I attended the Torchlight conference on the same visit, and I just wanted to, I took some notes and snippets. Jerry thought I was writing a speech earlier, but this is how I took notes. The interesting things that Dan Heflin said, and I think this was in response to a question that came out of the audience. He sees little correlation to the current market and economic situation in terms of what it looked like 10 years ago. This was in response to a second bubble, and how does it look? And he said it looks very different, and he sees no real coordination or correlation between the two. He said that Torchlight had a short position 10 years ago. They have no short positions at this time. Very interesting statement. No short positions. Said New York and San Francisco and similar gateway markets are completely equity driven. I think we kind of know that, but they're not debt driven in any way. And so for their purposes, they're finding the values even on their debt side in the secondary markets, which seems consistent with what we've heard from our equity people as well. So that's where the deals are. He gave a couple of stats that were astounding to me. Borrowing is at an historically high level. Current borrowing is 350% of GDP. So
corporate or personal or both?
United States borrowing, all in, all forms of borrowing are 350% of gross domestic product, which was astounding. The U.S. federal debt, the U.S. government debt, is 102% of GDP. That's a staggering figure, 102% of GDP. He said that there hadn't been a federal funds rate hike in more than 10 years, and the change in Fed policies for bank reserves, and this was the number that kind of got everybody's attention, means that the 14 largest banks in the United States have $2.5 trillion with a T, in excess reserves, and that's money that Torchlight sees as potentially investable in the marketplace, and that liquidity hasn't hit the marketplace yet.
You're kidding.
$2.5 trillion. Pretty interesting. Alan Greenspan was fascinating. I stopped writing and just listened. Brilliant guy, sharp as a tack, and just had a lot of observations. But the main takeaway is the current situation and trying to predict it, can't do it. Can't say where it's going, can't figure out, you know, where it's going to land. Nobody was in a predictive mode. But a fascinating guy, very, very sharp. So all in all, it was a good visit, but Dan Heflin did not disappoint. He's a very, very bright guy. Those of you who know him longer than I have know already. He's very insightful. So I got a lot out of that visit. Just wanted to share those few points. I did have one other item, maybe two, but one. I wanted to request that the November 4 meeting of the board be agendized under the Brown Act to allow the persons who are at the Invesco conference to appear telephonically. I think we would have the ability to talk to Invesco, talk to Max, and see if we could find some space and allow that participation. I didn't give Karen much of a heads up, but I did let her know. Well, the meeting has to be agendized that way. Those appearing telephonically would not have to appear for the whole time. Depends on, I think we have a quorum count, if I remember it right. So I think we'll have a quorum. It's physically present here, which is required.
Are there certain agenda items you'd be interested in that we could just schedule the time to get to those items when your call is expected? That way, I'm just curious why you want to.
I don't know the answer yet because I haven't seen the agenda.
Right.
And I think probably the answer to that is yes.
Right.
I haven't seen the agenda. I just felt like there's no reason we shouldn't participate simply because we're 350 or however many miles away. I guess it's 500 miles.
Would this set a precedence, like for all future meetings, where we, if anybody's out on a business trip, SACRAS, wherever, well, it would happen during SACRAS, but other conferences, we provide for.
This is voluntary, right? Or mandatory?
It's purely it's voluntary.
It's available under the law for the board to use if you choose to. It's not mandatory. But the location where Scott will be has to be accessible to the public, and you will have to post an agenda there as well.
Yes.
So we'll have to work out with the host to make sure that location fits and meets all of the requirements.
Now, there's a martini shaker in the background.
Doesn't notice that's
the. This is the morning game. It's the morning. Yes, I mean, it's. I've seen it for many, many years in a variety of agencies that I appear in front of, where members are appearing by telephone. Some due to disabilities, some just because of travel schedules. But I don't like missing meetings if I can avoid missing them. And it occurred to me that there would be four of us there. And we have the ability to participate, and would prefer to if we could. And the only way to make that happen is to notice it that way.
I'm in favor. Can we kind of coordinate? I know we have their schedule. Maybe if there's something we don't mind missing. I don't want to miss something that may be really important. So
do we know what's going to be on the November 4th agenda at this time? Any ideas? Yes, and it's in my office.
Anyway, that's my request. Yeah. So.
And I don't oppose the idea. I'm just trying to figure out the logistics. I like it because I do it already for some other committees I sit on. I'm just wondering how it works for this board and whether we rely on it in future meetings when we're out of town, but we'd like to be able to participate, especially this agenda item we care so much about we want to vote on.
Well, you and I have an alternate, though, and they can do the voting for us, but I do want to hear what is going on with the meeting.
Right.
I don't know how you feel about the voting, but I have no problem with my alternate doing that.
Yeah,
but I want to hear the meeting. I want to.
Right. And in our case, we have one alternate that's a shared alternate. So Jerry only gets
I'm prepared to vote three times.
Yeah. so I mean, if when you have more than one of the appointed members or the ex officio member who's not present, then it creates, you know, you don't have a full board. And I'm just thinking, we're in state, we're somewhere where it conveniently can be set up, and we should participate if we can. And as Gabe points out, hopefully we can work around the conference schedule and.
We can agendize it that way.
I'm looking at something at 9:30 to 10:30, the future of multifamily. I mean, that's something I could miss. Seriously.
You're talking about the whole board, right? The whole board meeting.
No.
Yeah.
Well, we don't. It's allowed that way, and those appearing remotely can participate for the entire board meeting. I'm not suggesting that I'm prepared to do that because I haven't seen the agenda.
Mm-hmm.
So it may be that there are a group of items that are more important than others, right. I just don't know yet. But theoretically, it could be the whole meeting.
Gabe, are you going down?
I am.
Okay. Yeah. Well, now I understand. That's three of us.
Yeah.
So it would be. It would be.
There's four of us.
There's four. You're going to? Oh my God. Yeah.
That's why I was raising it.
Yeah.
I was going to just wait till the agenda came out, and if it looks like it's something that I needed to be here for, I would.
Yeah.
Not go or go for part of it and not the other part.
I agree. There's too many of us.
So it can be agendized just by you putting on the agenda. All right.
And there will be a quorum present here, a quorum of board here.
Yeah.
I think that's required, is
that's
it not,
required.
In the Brown Act, right? You have to have a physically present quorum to do it.
And also regarding the voting and the alternate, if you are appearing that way, the alternate cannot vote for you.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yes.
You can
vote
over
the phone.
Okay. And you have to.
What if I hang up the call?
During the vote?
I think you got the phone cord ring.
Anything to vote, huh? Well.
Okay.
All right.
That's all I have.
I've got some stuff. I went to California Retired County Employees Association in downtown Stockton Monday and Tuesday. And it was a fairly interesting conference. Two highlights. One is they had a presentation. It was called a fireside chat with Ray McCray and Annette St. Urban, who is the CEO. Ray McCray is a trustee on San Joaquin County's, and the fireside chat was, what's it like to be a trustee? And so they were telling all these representatives there what a trustee does, and Ann was firing questions at Ray about what it's like to be a trustee. And so that was kind of interesting. And then Amy is always good. I understand that you and Amy are going to be a major presenter at SACRS, and Mr. Carl DeMeo is going to be there as well, and the three of you are going to have a nice chat about the Reed DeMeo stuff that's been going on. Amy covered that well. You're going to have fun. Well, you know Amy, so you know it's going to be good. If you go to SACRS, that would be something to go sit down and listen to, because it will be, I guarantee you, it will be an interesting conversation.
It all started with Deborah's and Candace's idea.
Well, God bless her.
Deborah started.
It's a great presentation, and I can't wait to go sit down and listen to it. So, and that was brought up. The city of Stockton bankruptcy. Albert Holman, who is a city councilman, and he's the only surviving city councilman of the bankruptcy that's going on. He was elected before they had the bankruptcy, and after they covered all through the bankruptcy, he is the only one still there. They lost the mayor, and they lost the other three councilmen as a result of what was going on. And he was very interesting, talking about what they had to do to come out of that bankruptcy and the steps that they took. So all in all, it was pretty good. Downtown Stockton's nice, but you know, we had a good time. So, and I came, I was only there 2 days and came home. So that's it. Oh, one other thing. Oh, there is, so you know, RSG started probably 3 years ago a suit against the county to maintain the 80-20 healthcare split for retirees. And that suit has been going on and going on and going on. The county has proposed a settlement agreement. All of the retirees are going to be at a meeting on November 10th at the Crown Plaza to hear what that is. Basically, what I got in the email was that it's going to end up being a proposal for a 70-30 split for current retirees, and that'll be forever. So what is going on is that the county originally, the labor unions originally, have always been negotiating for retirees, and we've had to accept whatever the labor unions have negotiated for their actives for the retirees. And the last time that they had negotiations, the labor unions agreed to accept any increases from health care that the health care providers gave to the county, and just the increase. So that meant if Kaiser says, okay, we're going to raise you $100 a month for the same thing that you've been getting, then that $100 a month goes to the retiree to pay. It does not go to the county. With this agreement, it's going to be a 70-30 split forever, and when the providers raise it, it's not going to affect us except for the 70-30 split. So it's looking like, and this is only my preliminary observation of it, it's looking like it's a good settlement agreement. I don't know how the retirees are going to vote on it. It's got to go to vote for the retirees before they accept it. Part of the issue was that it is available to all retirees. It's not available to just RSG members. That's the retiree support group. So that's kind of it as a thumb shell. When as it proceeds, I'll keep you a date, but keep you abreast of what's going on. But that's kind of huge for retirees. In that they have an ability to negotiate something with the county, which they've never had before. So, and the last thing I'd like to do is I'd like to suggest that we, Bill Shun, who was a past mayor of Concord and had served on this board for a lot of years, he passed away, and so I would like us to adjourn in his memory when we adjourn.
I think that's a nice thing to do for both.
So that's it. Thank you.
Okay. Any further trustee comments? Okay. In that case, we are adjourning in memory of Bill Shun.
Great guy.
Okay. Great. Right. Amen. Thank you.
Sure.